The title of this talk this evening is "Haderech lo nimtzet b'shamayim, haderech nimtzet b'lev." The way is not found in the sky; the way is in the heart. Now I read it in the Dhammapada translated to Hebrew, but I double checked today with Karen, and she said there's no way that the Buddha would have used these words. So it's probably the translator took some, what shall we call it, artistic liberties. But still, I like this quote very much. Haderech lo nimtzet b'shamayim, haderech nimtzet b'lev. I like it also because it resonates with another quote I like very much, which is from the Bible, the Jewish Bible. It's a quote I've been having in my purse for the last over 10 years. And it says, "Ki ha-mitzvah hazot asher anochi mitzavcha hayom lo nifla'ati mimcha velo rechoka hi. Lo b'shamayim hi le'emor, מי יעלה לנו השמיימה ויקחיה לנו וישמיענו אותה ונעשנה. ולא מעבר לים היא לאמור מי יעבור לנו אל עבר הים ויקחיה לנו וישמיענו אותה ונעשנה. כי קרוב אליך הדבר מאוד, בפיך ובלבבך לעשותו. כי קרוב אלייך הדבר מאוד, בפיך ובלבבך לעשותו." And what it means for me is that this is what we've been doing in this retreat. We are here doing, practicing, realizing that it's not out there, it's not far away somewhere. We don't need it. It's not dependent on a teacher. It's not dependent on certain techniques. It's not dependent on certain books, scriptures that we read. It's not dependent on a plant. It's not dependent on a cave that we may find in the Himalaya. No, it's right here. בפיך ובלבבך לעשותו. So it's the good news. It's up to us. And we can do it. The other night, Shaila used a quote from Ajahn Chah about being who you are. And I smiled because on the way here to the retreat, I heard on the radio a song which you're probably all familiar with, and it, once you start listening to things with Dharma ears, you start hearing Dharma everywhere. So the song is by Sting, and the words that caught my attention were, "Be yourself no matter what they say. Be yourself no matter what they say." And it got my attention. I started thinking, what does it mean, being myself? And who is this self that I'm supposed to be, no matter what they say? And like Shaila pointed out the other night, can I not be myself? Can I be someone else? And I think many times on retreats, and you might have experienced this also, we sit here and we actually wish we can be someone else. After a few days of meditation, we get so sick and tired of this, what's going on in our head, and the pains and the aches in the body, that we just wish we could swap with someone else, their self, we exchange selves and take our neighbor's self, especially the one that's like sitting like the Buddha and it's, probably is not having any problems and any difficulties. Yeah, why not? Exchanging selves a little bit. But as the saying goes, wherever we go, there we are. We cannot escape. It would have been nice if we could have come to the retreat and lived ourselves outside indoor in the bus station out there and come here and be peaceful. But we can't. So what is this self we're talking about? And how is it created, this self? And who is this person I call myself? And what do I know about this person besides my name, my biography, and a pile? Michal used the word pile the other day. Arema, pile of habits and tendencies and conditionings that I call my own. In meditation, we have an opportunity to investigate and look into the nature of this self, this phenomenon. We can observe where and how the sense of self arises. Maybe we had a moment of perfect peace outside. We felt the sun on our face, the sky is blue, the beautiful little red, blue and yellow flowers, little ones on the grass. The wind is blowing, the mind was still. Where was the self? And then maybe there was a gust of wind and we got chilled and we got a little cold and the mind comes in and says, oh, it's going to rain, I hate the cold. It's going to be really cold and I didn't bring a sweater and I forgot to bring an umbrella. And right there and then, we see the self coming into being. The construction of the self arising. Or maybe we had a quiet moment in the hall. And by the grace of God, one moment without pains, the thoughts are very quiet, we're sitting very still. Maybe we're experiencing one of the raptures that Shaila talked about. And then we walk outside and we are going to a group interview. And we start thinking, what am I going to say? Do I have anything very smart to say? Do I have anything very impressive? Or is what I'm going to say stupid? Do I want to say it? Maybe I'll think of something else. Right there and then, we can see the self arising, the construction of the self. Maybe we're walking, doing walking meditation, very peacefully, very mindfully, step, 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 step. And then someone we are attracted to pass by. And we're thinking, oh, how do I look? I hope I looked really spiritual. I hope he or she noticed that I was really mindful. Right there and then, the rising of the self. It's really easy to notice it when we can speak to each other. And when outside of the retreat, and when we are quiet and kind of still and not too many distractions, and then someone says something to us about us. It can be a word of criticism. But interestingly enough, it can also be a word of praise. And we immediately feel this sense of self right there and then. And perhaps we noticed here while meditating the thoughts. These thoughts that I call my own. Just so many thoughts that maybe we started noticing. What are all these thoughts? And where do they come from? And where do they go when I stop thinking them? And it seems like there are so many thoughts just floating in the air. And for some reason, I pick some of them and some of them stick. And some of them just float away. And perhaps we begin to feel a little less that these are my thoughts. Perhaps we begin to feel these are just thoughts. There's less ownership. And the sense of self becomes an object for observing. Observing the rising and the passing away of the sense of self. Someone in one of the groups today shared that she experienced that even signing up for the Toranuyot sheet, she was considering whether to sign up for this Toranut or for that Toranut. And she finally realized there's so much self involved in this thinking. And at the moment she realized it, the self just dropped away. The process of self arising can be called selfing, can be referred to as selfing, ing, like do, doing, sit, sitting, selfing, because it's a process. So the sense of self also arises and passes away, arises and passes away, according to certain conditions, causes and conditions. We begin to notice what causes and conditions bring about the sense of self, and what causes and conditions soften and make it lighter. Christopher Titmus, our beloved teacher, said in his book, by the way, it's a very recommended book, Light on Enlightenment. He says, meditation supports witnessing where the I arises. Without the weight, Amishkan, without the weight of I and my, all things are at peace. Meditation supports witnessing where the I arises. Without the weight of I and my, all things are at peace. The sense of self is dependently arising, meaning when there are certain conditions for it, it arises. And when these conditions change, the sense of self changes as well. In the words of the Buddha, when this arises, that arises. When this ceases, that ceases. Stops. One of the definitions of awakening in the Zen tradition is to be intimate with all things. So we have here an opportunity to be intimate with the process of the construction of the self, arising, coming into existence, and dissolving. And when the solidity of the sense of self dissolves a bit, when the sense of self is not so solidified, not so mutsak, not so dense, not so defined and permanent, we can begin to also see that others around us are not so solidified and permanent also. We can begin to see through eyes that are not of the self. Some years ago, I lived in an ashram where we had a teacher. We had a main teacher, a guru, but every once in a while, there would be visiting teachers who would come and stay with us for a few days or a few weeks and share with us and teach. So there was an American teacher called Nikki Singer who came and stayed with us and taught. And one sentence that I really like He said, your life is none of your business. What would it be like to live my life as if it's none of my business? And when my life is none of my business, I can also see how other people's lives are none of their business. And we begin to see it all as processes in interaction, as innocent patterns, sometimes clashing, and we stop taking everything so personally. We begin to see what we and others have in common. On the outside, we all look very differently, but when we look not from the eyes of the self, of the personality, we see the essentials that we share in common. One of the things that we share in common is, like Don Juan often says to Carlos Castaneda, "Kulanu yetzurim anotim lamut." We are all creatures. We're going to die. And our death, Don Juan tells Carlos Castaneda, is right behind our left shoulder, always ready to consult us. He says, when you don't know what to do, when you have a big decision to make, consult your death. So that death is a good consultant. Some years ago, there was here in Israel a TV series called Amok Ba'adama, 6 Feet Under. And I don't have a TV, but once I was over friends and I saw one episode. And it happened in that episode that the main character is a young man, was diagnosed, was having a brain tumor, and that he had 3 months to live. And so he was, of course, very shook up, and he went to talk with a rabbi. Although he was not Jewish, he went to talk to a rabbi who happened to be also a very young and beautiful woman. And he chatted with her. You know, that's Hollywood for you. And and he told her that what he has. He said, "I'm going to die." And she said, "Me too." And he said, "Really? What do you have?" And she said, "A body." All creatures who have a body are subject to aging, to sickness, and to death. Death can also be a great teacher. I remember at the ashram where I lived, it was a spiritual community with a teacher, and it was based on the place had 4 principles. It was based on seva, selfless service, the terms were in Sanskrit, brahmacharya, celibacy, prishut minit, bhakti, devotion to the guru, and yoga and meditation. Very somewhat similar to what we're doing here. Practicing really hard every day at 4:30 in the morning, getting up for practice. And I'm not a morning person. By far, I'm not a morning person. But for 7 years, every day, 4:30, getting up for practice. Shaila said the other day, Shaila, can I say this? That you get more good karma points if you get up early in the morning to meditate. Now she was joking, of course. Maybe she wasn't. Anyway, I think I got some very good karma points. 4:30. So one of the members of the community was diagnosed with AIDS, and he was dying. And the community decided to keep him, to take care of him in the community, not to put him in a hospice. And so we all shared in this experience of being with him. And I remember he came for the last meeting with the community. Every week we had a meeting with our teacher, and it was called satsang. We met with him once a week. Not every evening, once a week we met with him, the whole community, and he would give us teachings. And that day, his name was Roop Kumar, the guy who was ill. And Roop Kumar gave the teachings. And it was shortly before his death. And he said, "Stop wasting your life." What are you doing? What are you doing with your life? What are you doing in the evenings? What do you talk with your friends about? What company do you keep? Now, mind you, this was all in the spiritual community, getting up at 4:30 every day to practice. It wasn't, you know, just life of leisure. Still, he said, "Wake up. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your life." In the Bhagavad Gita, it's a great Indian epic. It's actually in the Mahabharata, which is the Bhagavad Gita is part of. The main character, the hero, Yudhishthira, he goes on a journey and he encounters a lake that asks him questions. And Yudhishthira, he was the son of Dharma. And the lake said, "You answer all these questions right and I'll let you live. You don't answer them right and you die." So there are a series of many, many questions. Very, very beautiful. I encourage you to read it. It's been translated to Hebrew and it's beautiful. And one of the questions the lake asked Yudhishthira is, "What is the most wondrous thing in the world?" And Yudhishthira says, he answers correctly. He stayed alive. He said, "The most wondrous thing in the world is that we see death around us all the time, and we still live as if we are immortal." Death can also be a great gift. Some years ago, I went to get some alternative treatment someplace, and I got there a bit early, about an hour early. So I decided I'll sit and meditate on the grass outside. And as I was walking on the grass, there was something on the ground. I couldn't quite tell what it was. And I looked at it, it was a very small animal. And I realized it was a baby rat. And it was dying. It was very, either it was sick or it fell from the tree. Because, you know, rats build their nests on the trees sometimes. So I was afraid to touch it because I was afraid it would bite me and, maybe it has some kind of disease, you know, all these things we have about rats, until this movie Ratatouille came in and changed our whole relationship, you know, this animated movie about rats. But this was before I saw Ratatouille, so I still had this thing about diseases and rats. So So I just left it there and went and sat to meditate. And a few minutes later, I hear this great noise, and a guy is coming in to mow the lawn. Thank you. לקסח את הדשא, בקיצור. With this great machine, he's starting to לקסח את הדשא. And so I ran to him and I said, no, no, wait, you can't do that because there's this little creature here and we got to do something, you're going to kill it. We got to do something about it. And he was, you know, this big guy, and I was sure he would not be afraid of the little baby rat. But of course, he was more afraid of than I was. So he found a little piece of paper and kind of put the little rat on it. And I thought he would place it on the ground somewhere. But he was so afraid that he just got it on the paper and threw it into the bushes. So I went to look for it. And I found it in the bushes. And he fell in such a way that he was facing me with his face. And so I could see his eyes, and he was breathing really hard and fast. And I looked at him, and I saw in his eyes that he knew he was going to die. And that he was very, very afraid. I could see the terror, the eima of death in his eyes. And I saw the reflection of myself in this little baby rat eyes. I too am afraid of dying. And I too am going to die. So I sat down with him. I just sat down next to him. And I was just with him. He was looking at me. I was looking at him. And we just sat together like this for a long time. And then came the time of my appointment, and I went in. And when I came out after, and I went to look for him, he was dead. And I felt he gave me the gift of no boundaries. Because when we say, may all beings be happy, we don't mean only human beings. But all creatures who are subject to birth, aging, sickness, and death. All love life. All are afraid to die. The boundaries between us are not so strong, are not so great as they may seem. This is a story from another tradition, but same points. I'm sorry, it's in Hebrew. החכם ריבהו ביקש להעניק לתלמידו נידגהה את החוויה הישירה של אישניות. אך למרות כל מאמציו, לא הפנים התלמיד את ההוראה, ושב לעירו. החכם שאהב את תלמידו כבנו, בא מדי פעם לבקרו, כדי לראות עד כמה התקדם בדרכו הרוחנית. לעתים היה עוטה על עצמו זהויות שונות, כדי שהתלמיד לא יכיר אותו. פעם אחת התחפש לכפרי פשוט, ומצא את נידגהה צופה בעניין רב בתהלוכה מלכותית. מה קורה פה? פנה הכפרי אל תלמידו. המלך עובר בראש התהלוכה, ענה לו נדאגה. המלך? המלך עובר בראש התהלוכה? אך איפה המלך? שם על הפיל, הצביע נדאגה. אה כן, אני רואה את השניים, אך מי מהם המלך ומי הפיל? אין לך עיניים בראשך? הרי ברור לכל שהאיש שם למעלה הוא המלך, והחיה שם למטה היא הפיל. מה הטעם לדבר עם איש כמוך? אוי, אל תהיה חסר סבלנות כלפי בור כמוני, התחנן הכפרי. הסבר לי בבקשה, למה אתה מתכוון כשאתה אומר למעלה? ולמה אתה מתכוון כשאתה אומר למטה? נדהג החל לאבד את סבלנותו והתפרץ עליו. הרי לפני רגע הראיתי לך את המלך ואת הפיל, האחד למעלה, השני למטה. אם אינך מבין מה שאומרים לך, התכופף והראה לך. הכפרי התכופף, ונדהגה טיפס והתיישב על כתפיו. עכשיו אתה תופס, אני למעלה כמו המלך, ואתה למטה כמו הפיל. לא, עדיין לא. אתה למעלה כמו המלך, ואני למטה כמו הפיל. למעלה, מלך, למטה, פיל, עד כאן הבנתי. אבל למה אתה מתכוון כשאתה אומר אני ואתה? נדאגה נותר ללא מענה. לפתע תפס, קפץ למטה, נגע בכפות רגליו של מורו ואמר לו, מי אם לא החכם ריבו, האוהב והאהוב, יעשה הכל כדי לטהר את ההכרתי ממושגים כוזבים. זה לקוח מהריבו גיטה. And I'd like to end with a poem that I think many of you know by Thich Nhat Hanh, a great Buddhist Vietnamese teacher. And I read it both in English and in Hebrew. It's called, Please Call Me By My True Names. Do not say that I'll depart tomorrow, because even today I still arrive. Look deeply. I arrive in every second, to be a bud on a spring branch, to be a tiny bird with wings still fragile, learning to sing in my new nest, to be a caterpillar in the heart of a flower, to be a jewel hiding itself in a stone. I still arrive in order to laugh and to cry, in order to fear and to hope. The rhythm of my heart is the birth and death of all that are alive. I am the mayfly metamorphosing on the surface of the river, and I am the bird which, when spring comes, arrives in time to eat the mayfly. I am the frog swimming happily in the clear pond, and I am also the grass snake who, approaching in silence, feeds itself on the frog. I am the child in Uganda, all skins and bones. My legs are as thin as bamboo sticks. And I am the armed merchant, selling deadly weapons to Uganda. I am the 12-year-old girl, refugee on a small boat, who throws herself into the ocean after being raped by a sea pirate. And I am the sea pirate, my heart not yet capable of seeing and loving. I am a member of the Politburo with plenty of power in my hands. And I am the man who has to pay his debt of blood to my people, dying slowly in a forced labor camp. My joy is like spring, so warm it makes flowers bloom in all walks of life. My pain is like a river of tears, so full it fills the four oceans. Please call me by my true names, so I can hear all my cries and laughters at once, so I can see that my joy and pain are one. Please call me by my true names, so I can wake up, and so the door of my heart can be left open, the doors of compassion. אנא קראו לי בשמותיי הנכונים. אל תאמרו שאעזוב מחר, משום שאפילו היום עודני מגיע. התבוננו היטב, אני מגיע בכל שנייה להיות ניצן של ענף אביב, להיות ציפור זעירה, כנפיה עודן שבריריות, לומדת לשיר בקינה החדש. להיות זחל בליבו של פרח, להיות אבן חן, מחביאה את עצמה בתוככי אבן. עודני מגיע, בכדי לצחוק, בכדי לבכות, בכדי לפחד, בכדי לקוות. המקצב של ליבי הוא לידתם ומותם של כל אלה החיים. אני השפירית משנה צורתה על משטח הנהר, ואני הציפור אשר עם בו האביב מגיעה בזמן לאכול את השפירית. אני הצפרדע השוחה בשמחה בתוך מי הביצה הצלולים, ואני גם נחש העשב אשר ניגש בדממה, מאכיל עצמו בצפרדע. אני הילד באוגנדה, רק אור ועצמות, רגליי דקיקות כמקלות במבוק, ואני סוחר הנשק, מוכר כלי נשק קטלניים לאוגנדה. אני הנערה בת ה-12, פליטה על סירה קטנה, המטילה עצמה אל תוך האוקיינוס לאחר שנאנסה על ידי פיראט. ואני הפיראט, ליבי עדיין איננו יכול לראות ולאהוב. אני חבר הפוליטבירו עם שפע של כוח בידיי, ואני האיש אשר חייב לשלם את חוב הדמים שלי לאנשיי וגוסס באיטיות במחנה הכפייה. השמחה שלי היא כמו אביב, כה חמה שבשלה מלבלבים הפרחים בכל הלכות החיים. הכאב שלי הוא כמו נהר של דמעות, כה מלא שהוא ממלא את ארבעת הימים. אנא, קראו לי בשמותיי הנכונים, כדי שאוכל לשמוע את כל זעקותיי ואת כל צחוקיי בה בעת. כדי שאוכל לראות ששמחתי וכאבי הם אחד. אנא קראו לי בשמותיי הנכונים, כדי שאוכל להתעורר. וכדי שהדלת של ליבי תוכל להישאר פתוחה. דלת החמלה.
Let's sit in silence for a few minutes. May all beings be safe. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be free of suffering. May all beings be happy.